Morning, birds. How you doing? Yeah, I know you got chased out. We had the sanitation people there a second ago. So, birds. Big news. You know that guy Pence? You know, you seen him? Vice President? Yeah, that's the one. He's going to be publicly vaccinated. How about that, huh? I'm imagining that. What do you think? What could go wrong? Hey, Mike. No, this one goes in the arm. You don't have to pull your pants down. Mike? Goes in the arm. Good morning. It's 3 after the hour. A chilly one here. We started the morning 34 degrees in Chicago as we went on the air. And it's true. We're surrounded by vaccine news this morning on Pirate Radio from Chicago at bleat.network. And here we go. The president of France is a COVID positive. President Emmanuel Macron of France tested yesterday, the French presidency revealed his government just trying to lift lockdown restrictions over there before Christmas. Mr. Macron will work in isolation for the next 7 days, said a statement. The office of Jean Castex, the country's prime minister, said he would also work from isolation because of his recent proximity from Mr. Macron. And then they have a list of other world leaders who have contracted the virus, including President Trump. I dispute that. I don't know about that. I just don't buy it. Anyway, Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the UK did. President Jair Bolsonaro of Brazil and President Duda of Poland. And then back to Mr. Macron, 42, not known to have any particular medical problems, but they play it pretty close to the vest over there in France. So get this. Now they're going to contact tracing, which with a group of world leaders is relatively easier. They are going to look at Pedro Sanchez of Spain and Antonio Costa of Portugal. These are folks that he has met with, and on. So we wish them the best over there in Europe here. Here in the United States, not shocking, but worth noting here. We talked about this when I was talking to Dr. Paul. I'm going to give him a ring and talk about the latest on the vaccine. Anyway, two healthcare workers at the same hospital in Alaska developed concerning reactions just a couple of minutes after receiving the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine that happened on Tuesday. One of them still in the hospital as of this morning. A health official said that the cases would not disrupt their vaccine rollout plans, that they were sharing the information for the sake of transparency. So here's the dealer, and this is not an uncommon reaction. I think my little sister stepped on a bee, if I'm not misremembering this, and I had something like this. The first worker was a middle-aged woman. She had no history of allergies. She had an anaphylactic reaction. It began 10 minutes after getting the vaccine. This happened at Bartlett Regional Hospital in Juneau, which is the capital, as you know. She experienced a rash on her face and torso, shortness of breath, and an elevated heart rate. So Dr. Lindy Jones, the hospital's emergency department medical director, said the worker was first given a shot of epinephrine, which is I think everybody's had one of those, standard treatment for things like that. Her symptoms subsided, but then they reemerged, and she was treated with steroids and then an epinephrine drip. Her symptoms reemerged, so she was moved to an intensive care unit and observed throughout the night. They got her off the drip as of yesterday morning. The second worker received his shot yesterday and then developed eye puffiness, lightheadedness, and a scratchy throat 10 minutes after the injection, hospital said in a statement. He went to the emergency room. They treated him with epinephrine, Pepcid, and Benadryl. Okay. Although the hospital said the reaction was not considered anaphylaxis. The worker was back to normal within an hour. The hospital, which had administered 144 doses as of last night, said both those workers did not want their experiences to have a negative impact on others lining up for a vaccine. And the hospital said that we have no plans to change our dosing or regimen or vaccine schedule. So that's the deal there. That all those cases are now going to be dealt out today. The FDA meeting to figure out how to evaluate Moderna's new vaccine. That has been fast-tracked. And Moderna and the Pfizer BioNTech vaccines are based on the same type of technology. But we don't know for sure whether they're going to both create those kinds of reactions. They consist of genetic material called mRNA encased in a bubble of oily molecules called lipids. And I'm sorry, it's when my printer ran out of paper. All right, best of luck to everybody. Vice President Mike Pence, did I mention it? And Second Lady Karen Pence are going to be vaccinated publicly on Friday. There's something odd about that whole, the idea of a public vaccination. Vice President's office has confirmed he will be the most high-profile person yet to publicly receive the coronavirus vaccine. So, high fives to him. It is 9 after the hour here. Two things. A very good piece of news, and then we'll commemorate something that should never have happened, but we'll take a moment. They are related. We'll talk a little bit about race today. The Major League Baseball people, MLB, have declared that the Negro League statistics, Negro League statistics from 1920 to 1948, are finally going to be recognized as Major League statistics. I think what this really means here is that the Negro Leagues have retroactively been declared Major Leagues by current MLB management here. This is, for baseball fans, this is a pretty big deal. Negro League statistics from 1920 to 1948, now officially classified as Major League. And, for example, you take somebody like Willie Mays, before he played for the New York Giants and became a superstar in the National League, he played for the, I think it was the Birmingham Black Barons of the Negro American League. And those stats, didn't count. So when you look at Willie Mays' career, now we will include the hits that he had when he was playing in that league. So that's a good thing. And I You know what? Better late than never, I think, is what we can say about that. The other thing that came up today, and I just I'll take a second here if you don't know about this. On this day in 1957, the last episode of the Nat King Cole Show aired on NBC. What's the story with that? It's a sad one. They simply could not find a black, they could not sponsor a black show, is really what it was. If you've ever seen Nat King Cole, I'll tell you, we're all taking a little time to research old stuff. Look up the Nat King Cole Show. It's on YouTube, I'm sure. This man was unbelievable. I mean, he's like a single camera, sits down on a piano, and he was compelling. What was the problem? The folks in control of the power and television in those days, they didn't see it. They couldn't do it. And, fie on them. In that same period of time, Admiral used to be a television manufacturer. It came to the attention of the Admiral executives, this is early in the 50s, that for some reason, black people, African Americans, were buying a lot of Admiral TV sets. And someone said, "Wow, okay, let's exploit this. Let's do this." Nope, they didn't want it. They did not want to be identified as a company that made black appliances. Well, can you buy an Admiral TV set today? No, because they finally figured out that money is money is money, and it doesn't really matter the race of the person who spends it. So, two things about that. Admiral not around anymore, and Nat King Cole. Well, let's play one. Here's Nat and his daughter.
Unforgettable. That's what you are.
Unforgettable. Though near or far,
like a song of love that clings to me, how the thought of you does things to me never before. Has someone been born?
Unforgettable in every way.
And forevermore.
And forevermore.
That's how you'll stay.
That's how you'll stay.
That's why, darling, it's incredible. Someone so unforgettable thinks that I am unforgettable too.
Thinks that I am unforgettable too.
That is a beautiful record. A studio combination. Nat King Cole had the original hit. And then Natalie Cole came in and did an overtrack on it for a new hit record. I think you probably knew all that. It's 15 after the hour. It's Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago on the Bleat.network. And yeah, lots of opportunities these days to look back and try to fix things a little bit. Anyway, coming up today, we have all kinds of distractions. We're going to talk about The Simpsons. I saw something that made me laugh. And then we have the Ghostbusters coming up. Ernie Hudson has a birthday. I am continually remembering, and I mentioned this if you've been listening to us, that 5 years ago, I took a trip with my daughter Smiley, a road trip, 21 cities in 23 days. That was going on 5 years ago today. And just about 5 years ago today, we were in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. Now, Kitty Hawk, North Carolina is a very desolate place. It's on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. I'd never been there before in my life. And on this day in, oddly enough, on this day in 1903, the Wright brothers made the first sustained motorized flight. It happened at 9:35 a.m. Central Time, piloted by Orville and Wilbur, his brother, on the ground observing. There is a thought in my family that we're actually related to the Wright brothers, and I got to stop saying that before I confirm it, but I think that's the case. Anyway, we went out there, and the word is spiritual, to be out there. It's very windy, and anyway, that's how things went. You want to hear more about that? All right, let's do it.
All the basic principles of every modern airplane are embodied in the Wright Flyer. So when you ride on your commercial airplane, you're flying exactly the same way that the Wright brothers pioneered aviation. The Wright brothers got involved with aeronautics in the late 1890s. They knew that the airplane was not one invention, but it was many inventions, all of which had to work in concert for the machine to be successful. Many experimenters thought you could build an inherently stable airplane, just get something in the air that would fly, and then worrying about steering it later. The Wright brothers realized that that wasn't the case. You needed to have a positive control system from the outset. The Wright brothers began their formal aeronautical design work in 1899 with their very first craft, a small little 5-foot wingspan biplane kite, to test their idea for control. And they developed a system called wing warping, where they literally would twist or warp the wings in opposite directions to be able to control the balance of the airplane. In addition to actually building the airplane itself, the other critical technical component of their work was their development of a successful wind tunnel. They didn't invent the wind tunnel. What the Wright brothers did was to design a set of instruments to give them a specific piece of data with which they could design their airplane. And that was revolutionary. Today, we still use wind tunnels in the same way. Each successive glider design and each successive year that they experimented, they started to develop answers to all of these questions: control, propulsion, structures, aerodynamics, all the elements that would make up the system. By the end of 1903, they head back to their tried and true test site of Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. On December 17, 1903, 10:35 a.m., the world's first airplane lifted off the beach for a 12-second, 120-foot flight. And the fourth flight was the real significant one. It lasted 59 seconds and covered 852 feet. And that fourth long flight really demonstrated that they had a true airplane, and the world changed at that moment. The food we eat, the clothes we wear, if we visit new lands around the world, that's all possible because of aviation. So even if you're not a pilot and even if you're not flying, every day your life is affected by the invention of the airplane by Wilbur and Orville Wright.
Uncle Orville, hey!
Good job.
Sade. 24 after the hour, it's Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago. For a Thursday, a week from today is Christmas Eve, and then we will segue into a new year. So, it's coming our way. Hey, we're going to do a show on Monday. It's the annual Winter Solstice show. Not sure what that means. It's the shortest day of the year, so maybe we'll... May I leave early, but not before we talk to Eldon Ham, the Attorney General of the show here. Eldon's going to come back. We'll talk about all the legal stuff that's coming up in the new year and the inauguration and whether the Supreme Court is going to be still standing. All of that happening on Monday. And you have a question for our guests, just drop me an email. It's radioanything@gmail.com. Toll free 844-220-3300, and we'll throw it out there. And that's how we get information. So today, let's see here. Well, this is good. This is good. You know Ernie Hudson? He saw Ghostbusters, right? Yeah?
Harry, do you believe in God?
Never met him.
Yeah, well, I do. And I love Jesus' style, you know.
This roof cap is made of a magnesium tungsten alloy.
What are you so involved with?
These are the blueprints for the structural ironwork in Dana Barrett's apartment building, and they're very, very strange.
Hey, Ray, do you remember something in the Bible about the last days when the dead would rise from the grave?
I remember Revelation 7:12. And I looked as he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became as black as sackcloth, and the moon became as blood.
And the seas boiled, and the skies fell.
Judgment Day.
Judgment Day.
Every ancient religion has its own myth about the end of the world.
Myth? Ray, has it ever occurred to you that maybe the reason we've been so busy lately is because the dead have been rising from the grave?
How about a little music?
Better call
Ghostbusters.
Everybody now. Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters!
That's Ray Parker Jr. and the theme from a movie featuring Ernie Hudson, who has a birthday today. Ernie Hudson, Ernest Lee Hudson, born on this day in Benton Harbor, Michigan. You know, whenever I see this stuff, who knew? Not so far from where I'm sitting right here. Ernest Lee Hudson appeared in all kinds of stuff. The role of Winston Zeddemore in the Ghostbusters series, Sergeant Daryl Albrecht in The Crow, and Warden Leo Glynn on HBO in Oz. So, yeah, he has birthday today. You know what else? I did not know that he has dodged cancer twice. He is a two-time cancer survivor. In both cases, screening caught his cancer early. To give back and tell people about that, he became a spokesperson for something called Think About the Link. Think About the Link. It's in a campaign that educates people on the link between certain viruses and cancer. All right. Check out that. Ernie Hudson, a happy birthday to Ernie. At 32 past the hour, I back announce a little bit. What do? We did the Wright Brothers. You know, I'm going to plug a book here. I rushed into the library next to the studio here and grabbed this. You know, if you read nonfiction, one of the best nonfiction books ever is written by David McCullough. It's called The Wright Brothers. And it's about that event that mostly the peak was, you know, on this day in 1903 when they did the first sustained flight. But it's just what a wild story. You know, it goes from everything. And we heard a little bit about it and then sliced there. They had to figure out two things. They're not the same at all. One was how to build an airplane, and the other one was how to fly an airplane. Again, unrelated. Wilbur, my great-great uncle, we think, they talked about wings. He observed birds. We talked to the birds every morning. He figured, and I was looking at birds, and he saw that they changed their wing, the wing surface. And that is how that led them to think about flaps and ailerons and stuff like that. Anyway, that book is called The Wright Brothers, and a lot of stuff in that. It's worth noting that not the only aviators were the Wright brothers, but they were the significant ones there. So that gives us a chance to talk about something today. What else? Oh man, it comes through the windows, the news. Some of this stuff I can't even keep up with. We like the natural world here on the show. We talk to the birds. We're trying to talk to the bees pretty soon. I mentioned squirrels the other day. Monarch butterflies, say the Chicago Tribune, qualify for protection under the Endangered Species Act. I did not know that. I was looking out the window this morning talking to the birds. We don't have the butterflies yet, but it'd be nice if we did. Anyway, the Endangered Species Act would protect the monarch butterflies, but they're not going to get that protection because of what's going on in the White House. So that there. How about this? From The Guardian, a giant Maremma guardian dog protecting the endangered bandicoot. In Australia. All right. A zoo's Victoria program has adopted the trial use of Maremma dogs. These are big. This is a big dog. This is a very large dog. To protect the endangered bandicoot. I'm looking at this. The bandicoot, it's hard to... It looks like a little... It's like an anteater with fur. Well, maybe that's the reason they're endangered. Anyway, the idea of the trial is that the dogs will protect the bandicoots from feral foxes and cats as they are reintroduced into the wild. Call me crazy, but maybe we are getting the environment back. So that's going on in Australia. And get the scoop on that. Yeah, and I think we're going to go back to New Zealand next week. So, Yeah? All right. Tell you what, let's take a breath and go get some, what are you drinking this morning? Have some tea? All right, go get some more tea. And I will motivate you into the kitchen, and then we'll come back and we're going to talk about The Simpsons. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Maliba. Are we motivated? 23 before the hour. It is a Thursday. It's the 17th of December. It's a week before Christmas Eve. It's Pirate Radio from Chicago on the Bleat Network this morning. On this day, as I was looking through stuff, we might get into this more tomorrow. On this day, I remember this? I guess all these things have kind of become second nature now. This day in 2014, there was a cyber attack in Hollywood. Do you remember this? I kind of do. And we're going to get into this. Maybe we'll take this up more in length. As I said, I just vaguely remember it. It was against Sony. At the time, Sony was doing a picture called The Interview, which was supposedly a satire on the a satirical plot to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. You remember that? All right, anyway, they canceled that movie in the midst of this whole cyber attack. I'm going to get into this tomorrow. All right, we'll get into that tomorrow. It happened on this day in 2014. Cyber attacks. There's like one a week now. That was such a big deal, though, going back. All right. All right, the moment of the program that I have been waiting for with bated breath. In 1989, there were some cartoon characters that were like a little, they were like a little cartoon thing that, and then they graduated to their own show. Created by Matt Groening. That's right. The Simpsons premiered on Fox TV as a full animated series on this day in 1989. Oh my goodness. There they go. All right, there's Maggie honking the horn, right? I don't know. There she is. That first Simpsons episode was called Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire. There she is. Lisa's got the saxophone. But here's the thing. Earlier this year, the notion went around that the Simpsons had predicted all kinds of stuff over the years, and I have in my hand a list of seven. Oh, get in the garage there. Come on, Homer, get in there. Seven times the Simpsons accurately predicted the future. You ready? All right. Okay, let's get into this. Let's get into this. This is from Business Insider. 19 years ago, an episode of The Simpsons predicted that Donald Trump would one day become U.S. president. Simpsons has been running for almost 30 years. This is the anniversary. It's inevitable that some things that crop up in the show might occur in real life, but some of the plot lines are eerily close to events that have happened throughout the world. So, Should we give it a rip? Let's do it. Let's hear from them one more time. Come on. All right, here we go. All right. The Three-Eyed Fish. Do you remember? Oh yes, those of us in the environmental protection agency world, the Three-Eyed Fish. In this episode from 1990, Bart catches a three-eyed fish named Blinky in the river by the power plant, which makes local headlines. More than a decade later, a three-eyed fish was actually discovered in a reservoir in Argentina. Strangely enough, the reservoir was fed by water from a nuclear power plant. In 1991, watch it. In 1991, an episode of The Simpsons saw the Beatles' Ringo Starr diligently answering fan mail that had been written decades ago. I remember that. And then in September 2013, two Beatles fans from Essex actually received a reply from Paul McCartney to a letter and recording they had sent. I was surprised that they had sent to the band 50 years ago. The recording was sent to a London theater. The band was due a play at, but found years later in a car boot sale. What is that? A car boot sale? What is the boot? These Brits. It's in the boot. Anyway, it's part of a car. By a historian. There you go. And in 2013, the BBC's The One Show reunited the pair with a letter, plus a reply from McCartney. All right. In this is a tricky one. In 1993. Again. That's right. They parodied entertainers Siegfried and Roy in an episode called Springfield or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Legalized Gambling. During the episode, the magicians are viciously mauled by a trained white tiger, Siegfried and Roy, while performing in a casino. As you know, in 2003, the Roy half, Roy Horn of Siegfried and Roy, was attacked during a live performance. One of their white tigers mauled him. He lived, but he sustained severe injuries in the attack. How about this? In 1994, Lunch Lady Doris used assorted horse parts to make lunch for students at Springfield Elementary. I remember Lunch Lady Doris. She used to work in my high school. 9 years later, the Food Safety Authority of Ireland found horse DNA in over one-third of beef burger samples from supermarkets and ready meals, and pig in 85% of them. All right, now in 1995. Here's where I don't remember seeing this one. Well, maybe you did. The smartwatch? Yeah? Where was this? Again, The Simpsons introduced the idea of a watch that you could use as a phone in an episode aired in 1995. That was nearly 20 years before the Apple Watch. Wow. Lisa's Wedding, remember this? 1995 came with a lot of unexpected predictions. During Lisa's trip to London to see a skyscraper behind Tower Bridge that looks eerily similar to the Shard. The Shard? It's in London. They started building the Shard 14 years later. And this is the best one. Number 7 here. Lisa, hit it. All right. In season 20, episode 4, Faulty Voting Machines. This was in 2008. The Simpsons showed Homer trying to vote for Barack Obama in the U.S. general election, but a faulty machine changed his vote. 4 years later, a voting machine in Pennsylvania had to be removed after it kept changing people's votes for Barack Obama to ones for Mitt Romney. But wait a minute. That happened in 2012. I swear to God, it could never happen now. It couldn't. No. No, it couldn't.
I want
go. It's Mike Pence at the vaccination.
No,
it's not. It doesn't hurt. It can't possibly hurt, I don't think. I'm going to miss Mike Pence. I'm not sure why. You know, this guy's been in office for 4 years. I can't remember anything that he said or did. You always see him standing behind Trump, looking like he's got a toothache or, you know, something going on in the nether region. Yeah, I'm going to miss him. I miss Rudy Giuliani. Yeah, we don't have anybody that crazy coming into play, but I guess we'll just have to do our best. It's 10 before the hour. It's Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago, Bleat.network. And thanks for joining us every morning here. I guess this is a historical Thursday. There's just a whole lot of stuff going on. How about this? Oh, man. This is from Quora. I hope to get a chance to talk more to Aaron, the news baron, our news director, about Quora. I'm trying to tune in. Do you use Quora? If you're listening to me and you're on Quora, send me a shout, okay? RadioAnything@gmail.com. I'm under my own name, which is Gary Lee Wright with two R's and Gary, two E's and Lee, and Wright with a W. Gary Lee Wright. There's a quorum space, and it's got a picture of me and a microphone. And blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I'm just trying to figure out what the scoop is on Quora. I showed myself as a Chicagoan, and I've seen some questions about Chicago that I'm not sure what that is all about. I don't know how it works. Anyway, I think it's a very interesting platform, and I always check it out. So, how about this? This is from Quora. What did Anglo-Saxons use as toilet paper? Were you wondering? All right, well, come on. In the Anglo-Saxon period, up to 80% of the country was covered by woodland. In addition to timber, these oak and beech forests also provide massed pastures for the grazing of swine and were gleaned for nuts and berries at certain times of the year. I like that word, to glean. So anyway, they go through and they gleaned everything and they got the nuts and berries out. This goes back, remember like 6 months ago we had a shortage of toilet paper for about, I don't know, it seemed like forever. It was probably a week. Anyway, one unlikely but an important material was moss. So gathered and used as insulation between walls, they did, and they also used moss as toilet paper. So it's very absorbent. It's actually antibacterial, and it was used by both the Anglo-Saxons and the Vikings, my ancestors, huh? That's right. They were always innovators here. Both Norse and Saxon toilets were generally just pits dug in the ground, surrounded by walls of a wattle. I don't know what a wattle was. So you've got the Norse and Saxon toilets. If you're in your bathroom this morning, it could be worse. All right. So you've got walls of a wattle. The seat. This is the Norse and Saxon toilet. Was a piece of wood with a hole in it, and they have been, samples of waste were excavated at Coppergate in New York, and they still retain traces of what people ate, bran, things like that. All right. I know, that was weird. All right, one more. How about this? On this day in 1398, Tamerlane, a general, captured and sacked Delhi. He defeated the Sultan over there. Get this. This is how they waged war in 1398. Oh, man. Jeez, I'm reading this. They had camels. This is Tamerlane. He had camels loaded with hay, and then he set the hay on fire. And they had the camels charge at the Sultan's armored elephants.
Oh!
that long to hold you and keep you by my side.
John Lennon on the harmonica and the rest of the Fab Four. At four before the hour here on Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago, please, please accept our thanks for tuning in every morning and tell your friends if you have any. Tell my friends if you have any. And give us a shout out. It's radioanything@gmail.com. And 844-220-3300. Is the toll-free number. So there you go. All right, coming up tomorrow, it's Friday. We will do some work and we'll have some fun. We're going to talk to my friend Andy Gersten, a realtor and a guy who actually has his finger on the economy, a very very hip dude. And we'll also, I think we'll play another game. We have the Radio Olympics on Friday, so that's happening. And wow. Is that it? No. Is that really it? No. Is that it for today? No, it is. Yeah, that's it for today. Natasha Rodriguez produced this widecast.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying how. Much more than I never knew, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.